to go to the phones and visit with our next guest.
Meteorologist Day Weather. Meteorologist Don Day joining us here on the program. Fresh off his trip from California, the heaven sent, where a man jumped out of an airplane 25,000 feet high without a parachute, landing in a, 26-foot net or something like that, Don? Good to have you on the show.
It was actually 107 feet by 105 feet.
I was a little off then.
Now, can I ask just one simple question?
No.
did this guy have to pass any sort of mental competency test before they let him do this?
You know, Luke is brilliant and quite the athlete, and he has thought, obviously, he thought this through all the way to execution. So, yeah, do you have to be a little off-kilter to do something like this? Absolutely. But you also got to be smart, physically fit, and back it up with a lot of experience and know-how. And, you know, he pulled it off. A lot of this was his own doing, his own ideas, his own engineering.
Now, okay, so you were the meteorologist on site. How did that come about for you to be part of the Heaven Sent program where this went down, Don?
Well, we got to rewind back to 2012 when I was the meteorologist on the Red Bull Stratos jump from the stratosphere. And Luke, the guy who did the jump this weekend, was Felix Baumgartner's basically right-hand man. He helped Luke helped him train. He was also sort of the backup guy if something happened with Felix. So he came into this with over 18,000 jumps. He's been skydiving since he was a teenager, grew up in a skydiving family. So I got to know Luke and his family very well during the Red Bull project. So when he had this idea and it was all coming together, he gave me a call this spring and said, "Hey, I got this idea. This is when we're going to do it, and I need your help." And that's how I ended up on it.
Okay.
Wait, I got one more question.
Okay.
Was there at any point in time between these two guys any alcohol and a bar bet involved in this thing?
All I can tell you is no, but large sponsorship dollars dangling in front of them.
Oh, gotcha.
Now, okay, I'll rewind back then. How did you get involved with the Red Bull, the stratosphere jump as well? How did that come about? Because I was going to go into that as well. I didn't realize that the two had anything together with this.
Well, yeah, I mean, part of what I do, other than doing a lot of radio work, is I do a lot of consulting that involves very large stratospheric balloons for government and scientific research, and there's only very few of us with the weather background and using high-altitude balloons. So when it came to Red Bull, there was only a couple of people, and I happened to be chosen for that one. So I just happened to have the background and the experience that they needed.
So take us through this, because obviously there's a lot of math and there's a lot of science that has to go into a jump like this from so high up, and everything's got to come into place. Take us through this jump. What actually did all of it entail, and how precise does one have to be to do something like this? Because it's hard to get the concept of jumping from 25,000 feet and hitting a 100-foot target.
Well, absolutely. You know, and when I first heard it, when he first told me about it, I go, "You got to be kidding!" And everyone I talked to was that, "Oh, this is insane. He's going to kill himself." But first of all, experienced skydivers can do a tremendous amount of steering with their body. There's a lot you can do by angle of attack, the angle you're going down, moving your legs, moving your arms. There's a lot you can do to control yourself. So from that standpoint, that's how a lot of the expert paratroopers, the Navy SEALs, when they go in and skydive, they can be very, very accurate. Anybody who was at Frontier Days this year, if you notice those jumpers that came in during some of those shows, it was amazing how on target they were. So from that standpoint, an experienced skydiver can hit a target fairly accurately. What Luke developed, because when he first started doing this, he goes, "Well, I'm going to use a GPS, and I'm going to GPS the exact spot I need to go." But what he found out when he was testing was that when you're moving so fast downward at an angle, you might think you're above the net, but you're actually at an angle that will take you away from it. And so he figured out really quick that the GPS thing wasn't going to work. And this is where it became a really brilliant move on his part. He's also a pilot. And anybody who's familiar with private aviation or aviation in general, when you approach a runway, there's something that's called a PAPI, which lights up that tells you whether or not you're on the right glide slope. You have red and white lights. And the white lights say you're lined up on the runway, you're on the right angle of approach, and you should hit the runway. What he did is he took that same device and pointed it straight up. So when he was coming down, he had these red and white lights that told him whether or not he was lined up or not. So he got rid of the GPS and used this very ingenious idea of taking runway lights and pushing them upward vertically instead of horizontally.
Don Day, our guest, joining us, part of the Heaven Sent on Saturday. I got to ask with this, Don, when Luke left the plane, it's kind of out of everybody's hands there. It's up to him. What's going through your guys' mind as you're watching this? Are you still keeping track of the atmospheric conditions and everything, or is it kind of out of your hands on that part?
Yeah, you know, there was nothing he could do after he jumped, obviously. But yeah. What we had to watch for is, he had to make sure there were no surprises in terms of the wind, and that's why I was there. We had a wind sensor on top of the cranes that held up the net. We also had a weather balloon that we launched shortly before he took off that measured the wind at very critical levels between the ground and 25,000 feet. So Luke and I got together right before he got on the airplane. He knew the wind speeds and the directions because the wind would be enough to move you. So my biggest heartburn was having a wind gust come up on the ground or near the ground that would blow him off course at the last minute. And you know, that was my biggest heartburn there, was making sure we had a really good idea of the wind and wind direction. The wind direction had to be right as well, because like an airplane, he wanted to be flying into the wind when he hit the net. So we had to make sure all those things were lined up. But once he took off and was at altitude, especially this being a live television program, once he took off, it was it. He was on his way. He was going to jump no matter what.
Don Day joining us here. So, what was the riskier project you were working on? The guy who jumped from basically space, the stratosphere, Red Bull stratosphere project, or this one?
Well, the stratospheric jump was probably more dangerous in the sense that there were multiple ways to die.
This one there was only one splat.
There was only one. So from that standpoint, that was a bit more dangerous, although a lot of people would argue that. However, there were a lot more moving parts with that project than this one. This was very straightforward, and once we had a good idea of the engineering, how he was going to put this together, it all came down to him on execution. Now, I listened to you guys right before the break, and I heard Dave say about a psychologist, or, you know, he needs a psychologist or whatever, but he did. He had one of the best sports psychologists around, a guy whose client list is full of NFL football players. Uh-huh. In fact, there were three Seattle Seahawks players that were there at the event. His name is Michael Gervais, and his sole goal over the past couple of months all the way up to the jump was to get him in the right frame of mind, get him to where he was focusing and concentrating just like an athlete would, whether it's for a birdie putt, whether it's kicking a long field goal. The exact same things applied for him to execute. Everything else was in his favor. He just had to execute, and he did.
That's crazy.
I thought his job was to talk him out of it.
No, actually, you know, it was, you know, you may think someone like that is crazy, but you actually need people like that in the world to push the envelope, to mm-hmm. push the human experience a bit.
It was really compelling TV, especially with the Screen Actors Guild saying you have to put a parachute on, and then at the right before saying you don't have to put the parachute on, and it seemed to it was really good TV. It was a really good program, Don. It was really cool seeing you as part of it, and of course representing Wyoming, I just thought it was a good TV show. We were riveted in front of the TV. It was cool.
And I was lucky because I got the blonde Fox host in the control room and carried to the other Fox host. So I really lucked out there. But you know what? A lot of folks were telling me, oh, that was all made up. That was just to add drama. But I can tell you I was there with the Screen Actors Guild and OSHA showing up at the last minute Friday afternoon trying to put the kibosh on it. It was absolutely, as they described on the program, they have the ability to pull the plug mm-hmm. on any production at any moment. That's how strong that union is.
Good.
I thought it was nice you described it as straightforward. I would have described it as straight down.
Don, hey, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little explanation into this. Good job, and it was a good program to watch. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
All right, bye-bye. There you go.